Hello and a warm welcome to the debate coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Now, based on the New York Times and an expansion of military action, Israel has raided a weapons depot in Iraq. Now, in reaction, Iraqi National Security Advisor Faleh al-Fayyad said that Baghdad will do what's necessary to protect Iraq and deter any destabilizing attempts. Now, two Israeli drones also fell in Lebanon, one of them damaging a Hezbollah media center. Hezbollah chief promised the resistance movement will prevent Israel from sending more drones to Beirut. The Lebanese president also called the incident a declaration of war on his country. Tel Aviv saying that it's also attacked an Iranian base near the Syrian capital. With the new adventures by Tel Aviv, what's the outlook of security situation in the Middle East, which is already tense? Now let's explore different aspects of the issue in tonight's debate program. First, an update from our correspondent Mohammed Ali, who is in Beirut now. Mohammed, over to you.
Yes, there are a lot of condemnations for the Israeli attacks, for the multiple ones that happened on Syria, Lebanon, and of course Iraq. Let me start by Lebanon, Beirut, where I am now. Lebanese President Michel Aoun said that this attack, the Israeli attack, amounts to a declaration of war, and Lebanon has the right to protect its sovereignty. The Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, its Secretary General, also said that they will intercept and shoot down any future Israeli drone that tries to enter Lebanese airspace. The Syrian also army issued a statement when there was an attack by Israel on an area called Aqraba, southwest of Damascus, over there, saying that they downed most of the attacks. The Syrian foreign ministry did not yet comment on the issue, but usually it does send letters to the United Nations Security Council and Secretary General saying that this is illegal, this is undermining Syria's sovereignty, and it calls on the United Nations to actually play its role in preserving international peace and security and stopping Israel from such attacks. When we speak about Syria, there have been hundreds of attacks, of course, Israeli attacks on various locations. Always, Israel always puts the pretext that it is attacking Iranian forces, while everyone knows that there are no Iranian forces in Syria. There are only military advisors at the request of the Syrian government. So this is a pretext that has been actually being used by Israel always in attacking whether Syria or even Lebanon or Iraq. Israel always tried to show that it is fighting Iran. But very important note, finally, to say that we never saw any Iranian attack on Israel like it claims it is fearing of from Syrian soil. So everything happening, the Israeli attacks are actually illegal. There is no justification. And the international community continues, actually, up to this moment, according to many analysts, to keep silent about all of that.
Okay, thank you for that, Mohammed Ali, our correspondent who is now in Beirut. Now, joining me to discuss the topic tonight in this debate program will be author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer from London, and also author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Spreman, who's joining us out of Washington, D.C. Great to have both of you, gentlemen. Now, beginning with Jonathan, in a matter of 3 months, Israel has conducted 4 attacks on weapons depots in Iraq, 3 of them belonging to the Popular Mobilization Force, or PMU. The militia force, you know, is known as, or Hashd al-Shaabi in Iraq, played a major role in defeating the Daesh terrorists operating in Iraq. Now, what's Tel Aviv's plan?
Well, I suspect that one of the things that is at play at the moment is that there is going to be a snap general election in Israel on the 17th of September, just a few weeks away, and Benjamin Netanyahu is very keen to show that he is the leader who can stand up to Iran, which is how he is defining the narrative within those Israeli elections. And he is, of course, pointing the finger at Tehran, accusing Iran of using so-called proxies in different countries, including Syria and Iraq. And now, of course, by the attacks on Hezbollah directly in Lebanon, and indeed, I understand this morning, attack on Palestinians in the Bekaa Valley, widening that front. So I think a lot of this actually is for his own domestic audience.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to Washington, D.C. to Michael. Netanyahu expressly announced after this raid on the Iraqi PMU base that he's taken action against Iran and that the Islamic Republic has no immunity from Israeli military action. Is this a kind of Israeli proxy war against Iran?
think it is. The Israelis see Iran as the last country standing. They've managed to get the Americans to destroy Syria and to destroy Iraq, and they want to help destroy Iran. And the Israelis, despite their elections, have been pushing this war by proxy against Iran for years. These attacks are nothing new. They've been using Lebanese airspace to fire rockets and bombs into Syria, claiming that they're under attack by Iran, when that hasn't the case. It's simply imaginary. But you've got the American Secretary of State making remarks saying that Israel has a right to defend itself against Iranian threats. I have not seen, heard, or heard of any Iranian threats against Israel. It's basically, if you attack us, we'll respond in kind.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now back to London. Jonathan, Tehran, you know, this morning has warned that Tel Aviv against taking advantage of the self-restraint that is being practiced by regional countries in this part of the world. It also lent all-out support for regional states standing against Israeli aggression. So the question is, who benefits from an insecure Middle East?
Well, I think logically nobody benefits from an insecure Middle East, which is why this escalation of tension is particularly dangerous. Interestingly, Israel has actually succeeded in uniting most of its Arab neighbors against it. They were already, of course, fairly hostile ideologically, but it's been very interesting, the strength of the statements from Michel Aoun, the Lebanese president, and from spokespeople in Iraq, and of course from the Syrian government, lining up very clearly, warning Israel basically that you're playing with fire. And people who play with fire have the real danger of getting burnt. But of course there is also the American angle, that basically I think the Israelis are keen to try to persuade the Americans that yes, Israel is under threat from Iran, even if, as has been said already in the program, there has never been a direct attack on Israel from Iran. And Mike Pompeo's statement, which was mentioned earlier, sort of seems to suggest that the Americans are, at least to a certain extent, willing to be persuaded that there is a very real danger.
Now, Michael, when it comes to playing a destabilizing role, this is what Washington has been actually accusing Tehran of doing. But you see that Iran is offering, you know, stretching its hands, as the president and foreign minister said, and signing non-aggression pacts with regional states, Arab states. And we have Israel and Mr. Netanyahu saying that we are doing this, Iran will not be secure in this part of the world. So who's steering the situation in the Middle East?
Well, the people steering the situation in the Middle East are Israel and the United States, and to some extent Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, particularly the United Arab Emirates. Iran, for example, has sent its foreign minister Zarif to France to meet with the French diplomatic officials in a way to resolve the dust-up over the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which the Americans left and which the Europeans don't support. So the Iranians have gone out of the way to be, one, non-responsive to attacks, verbal and physical and military, and to be as diplomatic as possible, and to be open and honest, and seek a regional solution to this danger.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan, let's go back to that Israeli attack in Iraq. The attack also jeopardizes U.S. troops in Iraq. You know, a senior American official said, of course, on condition of anonymity, that the strikes could get the United States military removed from Iraq. And also, you know, that the Iraqi MPs and many officials in Iraq have already called for the same on several occasions. Let's have your take on that.
Yes, I think that is an element we have to take into consideration. These attacks were against various Shia guerrilla groups, or whatever you want to call the militias in Iraq, and therefore they could be angered against other forces in Iraq, and I think we will see greater pressure on the Americans to pull out fully from Iraq. But I'd like to pick up on the point about Minister Zarif's visit to Biarritz at the invitation of President Macron, which you mentioned earlier, which I think is very significant indeed, both because the French have really have led the attempt to try to avoid a total breakdown in the relations between the West and Iran over the nuclear deal. But it was also significant because we understand that President Trump did say that he could possibly have a summit with Mr. Rouhani, the president of Iran, within the next few weeks. So that was very interesting, and of course in complete contrast to things that have been coming out from the State Department.
Yeah, of course they want also to include the ballistic missile tests, and which Iran has already reacted and shown, and that's not our topic anyway. Iran says that missile capability is non-negotiable. Now back to the main topic, Michael. What's the U.S. plan in Iraq? I mean, are U.S. forces there to stay or to leave? You know, because you remember President Trump saying a while ago that we have this quote beautiful base in Iraq and we have spent a lot of money and we will be there to watch Iran closely.
Yeah, President Trump campaigned for president on the basis of we're going to end the forever war in Southwest Asia. We see no need to keep American soldiers abroad, and so on. And yet there are 50 bases ringing Iran, American bases. I don't know how many American soldiers there are in Iraq still, but it's somewhere on the order of 10,000 to 15,000, which must be division strength. And I've not seen any recent numbers on mercenaries operating there, but I think that's on the order of another 10,000 men with military training and background. So I think the Americans are there to stay. I think the Americans talk about removing soldiers from Afghanistan and from Iraq and from other countries in Europe and so
forth.
And
from Syria.
But the Americans are there to stay and to occupy, and exactly. And to go on and say, all right, we're going to watch Iran, and which means we'll be ready to strike Iran when the time comes.
Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, is they are asking for negotiations with Iran. Now, but Jonathan, elsewhere in the region, in Lebanon, we had these couple of Israeli drones that fell near the capital of Beirut the other day, and the Lebanese president called this a declaration of war on his country. Hezbollah chief promised that resistance group will not allow a repeat of such a thing. And he also told the Israelis to await surprises from Hezbollah. So what could be in the offing?
Well, of course, these two drones that one was near the Hezbollah media center, the other that came about 45 minutes afterwards and which exploded, are the worst incident of its kind since the 2006 Israeli invasion of Lebanon, when of course 1,000 people were killed and there was huge damage to the Lebanese infrastructure. And one of the reasons that Hezbollah has been rather popular in Lebanon is because they were seen to be particularly strongly against the Israelis and standing up for Lebanon. And so obviously Hezbollah does have the capacity, if it so wished, to do some sort of military action along the southern border of Lebanon, though I suspect that this is more a threat of words rather than an intention to actually carry something out. Because of course, if Hezbollah did take an initiative such as sending guerrillas into northern Israel or firing rockets into Israeli territory, that would undoubtedly provoke an enormous reaction from the other side. So I think it's more a battle of words.
So Michael, what do you think may happen, I mean, given the circumstances, and also the what Israel did and the Hezbollah chief's warning?
Well, I think that, as the distinguished gentleman in London said, you know, there is a lot of talk, but I think I also see the Israelis pushing Hezbollah and Iran repeatedly into a corner and attempting to claim they're always under attack and that these people have to be destroyed and to be removed. Sigal Mandelker, for example, the Undersecretary of the Treasury in charge of sanctions, has placed sanctions against members of the Lebanese parliament simply because they're members of Hezbollah. So how far can they be pushed? How much attacks can be made physically on them and verbally on them and diplomatically on them until there's going to be some kind of response?
Does the Israeli adventurism and aggression in the region benefit the Israeli premier? You mentioned something regarding the election. Does this enable him to kind of secure more votes in the upcoming elections in Israel?
I think he's playing that gamble, yes. He's decided, I think, that he needs to portray himself as the strongman leader, and if you get rid of him, then Israel's security will not be guaranteed. It's a high-risk strategy, of course, because it is alienating not only the Arab countries in the region and Iran, but also some European countries as well, because this Israeli adventurism with drones is being watched with considerable concern in several European capitals. It was mentioned earlier in the program that there's been no formal response as yet in London, perhaps because it's a national holiday today. But I think the British government and the other European governments will be viewing very seriously this situation, and behind the scenes, certainly not publicly, talking to the Israelis and warning them to calm it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have some sound problem with Washington, so let me continue with London. Jonathan, where is the Middle East region directed at, given the security concerns that are partly caused by Tel Aviv actions in this recent instance and extra-regional provocative measures elsewhere in the region?
Well, I think we're in a very dangerous period at the moment, but also one that perhaps could be hopeful if people begin to recognize the dangers and therefore put in place steps to avert them. I think we're already seeing that happen, for example, with the tensions that there have been in the Persian Gulf following the two tanker incidents, and the way that several of the Arab countries in the region, including Oman and Kuwait, have really recognized that it is hopeless to try to think of a stable future for the region unless some of these tensions are reduced. And so although, as I say, it's a very dangerous period, mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that perhaps in the autumn something can be done to calm things, both in the Gulf and around Israel, Palestine, and the neighboring countries.
Jonathan, what could be done exactly so that we could see some de-escalation and fall?
Well, in principle, I suppose the United Nations is the obvious forum, and certainly both Russia and China have indicated interest in trying to find peaceful ways forward, as have the Europeans. The problem, though, is what will Washington do in this case, which is why I personally think it's quite significant that President Trump let it be known in Biarritz at the G7 summit that he would be in favor of some sort of summit with Iran. And whereas I quite understand why you may be skeptical about what US wants to do with that, I think it would be very helpful if one of the consequences were that the United States did not veto any action by the United Nations to promote peace in the region.
All right, on that note, we come to the end of this program. Let me thank our guests. We had author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer from London, and also author and former U.S. Senator Michael Spreeman. And Michael, I apologize because of that sound problem at the end of the show. We joined us from Washington, D.C., and thank you for watching this. We'll see you next time.